Tim sprang to his feet and lunged toward Bitsy, who was looking at him in surprise. In his mind, the son of Jack Ross was already riding back down the Ironwood Trail, urging Bitsy with his heels until she was running full out. In reality, the Covenant Man seized him before he could manage three steps and hauled him back to the campfire.
"Ta-ta, na-na, young Tim. Be not so speedy. Our palaver's well begun, but far from done."
"Let me loose. She's dying, if he ain't killed her already. Unless, was it a glam? Your little joke?"
If so, Tim thought, it was the meanest joke ever played on a boy who loved his mother. Yet he hoped it was. He hoped the Covenant Man would laugh and say,
"I really pulled your snout that time, didn't I, young Tim?"
The Covenant Man was shaking his head.
"No joke and no glamour, for the basin never lies. It's already happened, I fear. Terrible what a man and drink may do to a woman, isn't it? Yet, look again. This time, thee may find some comfort."
Tim fell on his knees in front of the basin. The Covenant Man flicked his steel stick over the water. A vague mist seemed to pass above it, or perhaps it was only a trick of Tim's eyes, which were filled with tears. Whichever it was, the obscurity faded. Now, in the shallow pool, he saw the porch of their cottage and a woman who seemed to have no face bending over Nell. Slowly, slowly, with the newcomer's help, Nell was able to get to her feet. The woman with no face turned her toward the front door, and Nell began taking shuffling, painful steps in that direction.
"She's alive!" Tim shouted. "My mama's alive!"
"So she is, young Tim. Bloody, but unbowed. Well, a bit bowed, perhaps."
He chuckled. This time, Tim had shouted across the basin rather than into it, and the vision remained. He realized that the woman helping his mother appeared to have no face because she was wearing a veil, and the little burrow he could see at the very edge of the wavering picture was sunshine. He had fed, watered, and walked sunshine many times. So had the other pupils at the little tree school. It was part of what the headmistress called their tuition, but Tim had never seen her actually ride him. If asked, he would have said she was probably unable because of her shakes.
"That's the Widow Smack. What's she doing at our house?"
"Perhaps you'll ask her, young Tim."
"Did you send her somehow?"
Smiling, the Covenant Man shook his head.
"I have many hobbies, but rescuing damsels in distress isn't one of them."
He bent close to the basin, the brim of his hat shading his face.
"Oh, dearie me, I believe she's still in distress, which is no surprise. It was a terrible beating she took. People say the truth can be read in a person's eyes, but look at the hands, I always say. Look at your mama's, young Tim."
Tim bent close to the water. Supported by the widow, Nell crossed the porch with her spread hands held out before her, and she was walking toward the wall instead of the door, although the porch was not wide and the door right in front of her. The widow gently corrected her course, and the two women went inside together. The Covenant Man used his tongue to make a sound against the roof of his mouth.
"Doesn't look good, young Tim. Blows to the head can be very nasty things. Even when they don't kill, they can do terrible damage. Lasting damage."
His words were grave, but his eyes twinkled with unspeakable merriment. Tim barely noticed.
"I have to go. My mother needs me."
Once again, he started for Bitsy. This time, he got almost half a dozen steps before the Covenant Man laid hold of him. His fingers were like rods of steel.
"Before you go, Tim, and with my blessing, of course, you have one more thing to do."
Tim felt as if he might be going mad. Maybe, he thought, I'm in bed with tick fever and dreaming all this.
"Take my basin back to the stream and dump it, but not where you got it, because yon Pookie has begun to look far too interested in his surroundings."
The Covenant Man picked up Tim's gaslight, twisted the feed knob fully open and held it up. The snake now hung down for most of its length. The last 3 feet, however, the part ending in the Pookie's spade-shaped head, was raised and weaving from side to side. Amber eyes stared raptly into Tim's blue ones, Its tongue lashed out. Sloop! And for a moment, Tim saw two long, curved fangs. They sparkled in the glow cast by the gaslight.
Go to the left of him, the Covenant man advised. I shall accompany you and stand watch.
Can't you just dump it yourself? I want to go to my mother. I need to—
Your mother isn't why I brought you here, young Tim. The Covenant man seemed to grow taller. Now do as I say.
Tim picked up the basin and cut across the clearing to his left. The Covenant man, still holding up the gaslight, kept between him and the snake. The Pookie had swiveled to follow their course, but made no attempt to follow, although the ironwoods were so close and their lowest branches so intertwined, it could have done so with ease.
This stub is part of the Cosington Marchley stake, the Covenant man said chattily. Perhaps thee read the sign.
Aye.
A boy who can read is a treasure to the barony.
The Covenant man was now treading so close to Tim that it made the boy's skin prickle.
You will pay great taxes some day, always assuming you don't die in the endless forest this night, or the next, or the night after that. But why look for storms that are still over the horizon, eh? You know whose stake this is, but I know a little more. Discovered it when I made my rounds, along with news of Frankie Simmons's broken leg, the Weiland baby's milk sick, the Riverleys' dead cows, about which they're lying through their few remaining teeth, if I know my business, and I do, and all sorts of other interesting fiddledy-dum, how people talk. But here's the point, young Tim. I discovered that, early on in full earth, Peter Cosington was caught under a tree that fell wrong. Trees will do that from time to time, especially ironwood. I believe that ironwood trees actually think, which is where the tradition of crying their pardon before each day's chopping comes from.
I know about Cy Cosington's accident, Tim said. In spite of his anxiety, he was curious about this turn of the conversation. My mama sent them a soup, even though she was in mourning for my dad at the time. The tree fell across his back, but not square across. That would have killed him. What of it? He's better these days. They were near the water now, but the smell here was less strong, and Tim heard none of those smacking bugs. That was good, but the Pookie was still watching them with hungry interest. Bad.
Yar. Square fella Cosy's back to work, and we all say, thank ya. But while he was laid up, for 2 weeks before your da met his dragon, and for 6 weeks after, this stub and all the others in the Cosington Marchley stake were empty, because Ernie Marchley's not like your steppa, which is to say, he won't come cutting in the endless forest without a pard. But of course, also not like your steppa, slow Ernie actually has a pard.
Tim remembered the coin lying against his skin and why he'd come on this mad errand in the first place. There was no dragon. If there'd been a dragon, it would have burned up my da's lucky coin with the rest of him. And why was it in Kells's trunk?
Dump out my basin, young Tim. I think you'll find there are no bugs in the water to trouble thee. No, not here.
But I want to know—
Close thy clam and dump my basin, for you'll not leave this clearing while it's full.
Tim knelt to do as he was told, wanting only to complete the chore and be gone. He cared nothing about Peter Squarefella Cosington, and didn't believe the man in the black cloak did either. He's teasing me, or torturing me, maybe he doesn't even know the difference, but as soon as this damn basin is empty, I'll mount Bitsy and ride back as fast as I can. Let him try and stop me, just let him try. Tim's thoughts broke as cleanly as a dry stick under a boot heel. He lost his hold on the basin and it fell upsy-turvy in the matted underbrush. There were no bugs in the water here, the Covenant man was right about that. The stream was as clear as the water that flowed from the spring near their cottage. Lying 6 or 8 inches below the surface was a human body. The clothes were only rags that floated in the current. The eyelids were gone, and so was most of the hair. The face and arms, once deeply tanned, were now as pale as alabaster. But otherwise, the body of Big Jack Ross was perfectly preserved. If not for the emptiness in those lidless, lashless eyes, Tim could have believed his father might rise, dripping, and fold him into an embrace. The pookie made its hungry sloop. Something broke inside of Tim at the sound, and he began to scream.